So we were just chit-chatting about stuff, and he said that what he loves is to get through 4 films in a day, and wow. He feels like he's accomplished something, and I was like, yeah. You've gotten something done that day. You get through 4 films, and so I... So yesterday I strived to get through 4 films. It's not as easy as you think. They had to be short films. Shortish. You know,
shortish.
Both the Ozus and a couple others that were around an hour and a half. But I got a lot accomplished. 4 films.
So did you? So you got through 4. Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, it was
that's cool.
The 2 Ozus, the man in the white suit, and then the other 70s psychological thriller.
Oh, yeah, okay. I think Masters or Eureka put that out. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't done 4 movies in a day. I've tried to, back in my younger days before kids, I used to binge watch series. So I'd binge, you know, one time we did all of the Matrix trilogy in a day.
Okay.
I don't know if we've ever done Lord of the Rings, maybe like a few Star Wars or something. But my cousins one time, you know, they were bored over the summer. They were watching all the Star Wars movies, like 6. I don't know if they did them all in a day, but, you know, yeah, it's a lot of Star Wars.
Half of that day would be terrible.
That's right.
Well, a lot of people are binging Twin Peaks this weekend. I've just seen on social media people are going nuts. I'm still going to wait for the Showtime. Well, I'm not going to subscribe to Showtime, so I'll wait for the that'll come out on DVD, right? The Twin Peaks 3.
I'm sure. Yeah. One thing I was actually going to mention for my piece of flair, but I had something else is Showtime has a month trial right now. So if folks are looking, you know, way to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess we're doing the show. And excuse me, listeners, I'm drinking coffee too, so you might hear some sippage. Mark, hello, Mark.
Hello, Aaron.
Without further ado, I don't think you need an introduction, but we'll introduce you anyway. Mark Herney from lots of things. Criterion Now, Criterion Close Up, Criterion Cast, First Time Watchers. What else?
Sometimes In Session.
I think we're
going to actually be talking film scores there pretty soon. So, yeah.
Sweet.
You know, just making the rounds.
So to start off, we'll talk about what we've been doing lately, and it's been a week off the show for me, so we have a lot to cover today, but looks like you've got a lot going on too. So what you up to, Mark?
Yeah, I'll be really fast. I just, you know, this is a cool part of the show where you can kind of share some things that you've been doing that maybe, I mean, at least for me, I just don't spend a ton of time on social media like I would like to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, delved into the Jacques Demy box set. I'll talk about that a little bit later. Glad to be doing that. I saw Joshua Wilson was trying to figure out, should I subscribe to Filmstruck? Should I buy Demy? And he went with the physical box set.
So. Even though everybody told him to do Filmstruck, he was just like, screw you guys.
Yep, screw you guys. I'm buying Demy.
Yeah.
Although I did side with him. I did. Of course, I was watching the set at the time. So mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, you got to own this. This is... and just the fact that it's still dual format, it's gorgeous. I love it.
Yeah, I pulled out that big brick, and I was just like, wow. I think I made a comment. You can build a house with this.
build a house.
And when I pulled it out, I was like, wow, yeah, you can. Expensive house.
Yeah. It's a nice set. Guardians of the Galaxy 2, saw that with the kids. Not as good as the first. We rewatched the first one, and it flies by. But Guardians 2 is still a ton of fun and is definitely worth seeing in the theater.
Cool.
Personal Shopper, the latest ASEAS, probably vying for the top spot in my 2017 list. That is one that will stick with you. So ASEAS still
really?
Has it.
Huh.
Still has it, yeah.
Still got it.
Still got it. And Date Night was Defending Your Life, the Albert Brooks film. Figured we'd pair that with the new one that's coming out soon.
Yeah, yeah.
The title escapes me.
And Lost a little, in America.
Thank you. And a little... Alien Covenant prep, which just means, you know, going back and had a friend over and we watched Prometheus in 3D, which is, yeah, that film was still gorgeous, even though with all the plot issues and lore issues and that film has, it still looks great. Mm-hmm. It does look great in 3D. So, yeah, that's it.
The plot stuff didn't bother me. I still appreciate it. I'm not a hater, but I got to know, Defending Your Life, how'd that go?
That was great.
Yeah.
Usually on date night, I hand a stack of DVDs to my wife and say, here, this is, I want to watch movies. Here, pick one. and that's the one that she picked. And yeah, that we both liked it a lot. I mean, that's, you can tell how low budget the film is. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, I mean, you've got you know, Meryl Streep in a film, and Albert Brooks almost holds his own next to Meryl. And yeah, that's a it's a ton of fun. Yeah. That's a really really good movie.
Really a great date night movie. So well done.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, especially the ending. I mean, the ending is, you know, perfect date movie. So
absolutely, yep. Yeah. Perfect marriage movie, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I've been at a music festival. That's what I occupied my week off with. And actually, we were thinking about recording an episode while we were there, but no, that wasn't happening. So we were in Atlanta. We went to the Shaky Knees, which is really great. It's Centennial Park, right downtown, right in the middle of this big city. And we counted afterward about 30 bands, some of which was just partial. Were great. Actually, most were great. Most were really good. And we saw Slow Dive the night before, so a lot of live music. I looked at my letterbox. I hadn't watched any movies for like a week, so which is if you know
abnormal.
Me, yeah. So that speaks to my distraction. And then I made up for it yesterday with my four. And actually, I'm watching the fifth today with Van Gogh, PLA.
Oh, excellent. That's a long one, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't mix that into any four movies one day combination. It's too long. So
right.
So far, it's good, cool. But it's definitely a multi-sitting film.
Okay.
So anyway, because I was rocking out to music last week, we didn't have an episode, so we have a lot to talk about, Mark.
Yes.
I'm glad it's just you, because first off, we can talk, and I think we talk well, but yeah, there's a lot to I can cut you off, and you can cut me off if we get too crazy.
Absolutely, droning on, yeah.
So you want to just go ahead and end into the releases, the August releases?
Yeah, let's do it. I can go ahead and start us in there. The setting up the the first thing is Othello is delayed until September. It looks like. That's the latest date. That's actually the latest title. If you click on the Criterion site, click coming soon, that's where it is.
And I love when they do that, because everybody, you know, it's at the top of the coming soon page. So people say, oh, Othello's coming. And it's like, no, you dunce.
Yes.
Would have been out around now. But
right.
And by the way, I should correct, Matt had made a comment that the Filmstruck transfer was the wrong edition, and so he corrected that. He said, actually, it turns out that is the right one. So if you want to watch Othello on Filmstruck before the release, knock yourself out.
Cool.
And one thing about this month is, and of course, I was getting back in town and kind of resting as I got back, but announcements were supposed to be made Monday, if you go by the 15th, and they didn't. There was no explanation. Monday passed and nothing came out. And then the next day, you know, it seemed like there was a little bit of complaining. There's always a little bit of complaining, but not as much as usual. I don't know if maybe Criterion's gotten people accustomed to it.
Probably.
So I kind of, do you think that our announcements as big of a deal anymore, or is it less impactful, or, I mean, at least for you, what do you think?
Oh, for me, I mean, definitely. I'm always excited to see what Criterion's going to release. And, I mean, there one thing for this release slate, and we'll talk about it a little bit, is there was less excitement. A lot of kind of, okay, you know. And I get that. I don't quite agree. But, yeah, every announcement day, I mean, I don't post anything or make a lot of comments, but I'm always looking forward to it. I don't sit there and refresh. I just wait until everyone else picks it up and like, oh yeah, social media is buzzing. Let me go check it out.
I refresh. I'm a refresher.
You're a refresher.
Yes. And we'll get into the actual caliber of the releases in a second.
Yeah.
But yeah, that probably does play into it a little bit. And also the Phantom pages. So there's usually, and there weren't any Phantom pages on Monday. They came out on Tuesday,
which seemed like a sign. Yep.
Yeah, although some people were like, awesome, they're not spoiling these beforehand. So, of course, no, that just meant they're not coming out that day. But and then I've noticed on social media, some people don't like to know the Phantom pages before they're before the releases come out because they don't want to be spoiled. Do you?
Yeah.
To me, that's weird because you're just spoiling something you're going to learn about in 3-4 hours.
That day.
And I think we've talked about this before. But do you care about fan pages or do you like to see them?
I don't care, especially since it's the same day and it's not like you're spoiling a movie. You're only spoiling an announcement that day. So it's like, it doesn't matter to me. But, I get it. The excitement of, announcements are up and I can just scroll through and see them all at once.
Sure.
And just dig through them rather than kind of, knowing ahead of time. But, it's not a big deal to me.
This month there were 3 that were spoiled by Phantom Pages, and that's because there were 2 upgrades. But then one of the upgrades was spoiled on Twitter, if you're paying attention to the...
By Criterion.
Right. So we might as well just get right into it. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. The one thing I wanted to mention, Aaron, is the August is the month of Oldman. So that's pretty
sure
cool.
Sure is, definitely. So, so the breaking point, Michael Curtiz, that was teased in a newsletter drawing, I guess one of the Jason Poland drawings. It's a 1950 noir. Seems to be. Oh, I should also mention that in our Criterion group, our Criterion Now group, that we did a poll of which one people were most excited about, which I thought was pretty interesting to see the results.
Yeah, I like that.
So we'll get into that after we talk about these. But the breaking point, actually, some people said some good things about this. It sounds like it's not the best noir in the world, but, up there, definitely worthy of Criterion. We have a lot of noirs, actually, that have come out in the last year. I haven't seen it. A lot of people that I respect have and enjoy it. So have you?
I haven't seen it, no. And unfortunately, I haven't seen To Have and Have Not, the other film that the,
Right.
Based on the Hemingway book, but I'm definitely interested. I love when they add additional noir. They have, like you said, been adding a lot of noir, and I really like the cover a lot. I mean, to me, that just says a lot about the movie already. It kind of, to me, it says guns and money and what people will do to survive and protect what they love without even seeing the movie. I kind of just reading that into it. So yeah.
Yeah, and that's a good point about To Have and Have Not. I have seen that, and I forget who directed that. It wasn't Curtiz, was it?
It's Hawks.
Hawks, right, of course. How could I forget Hawks? But that seemed, I haven't read the Hemingway story, but that seemed to be a retread of Casablanca, basically just, moving it to a different locale, same actors, not the same actors, It wasn't French Resistance. It's been a while since I've seen it. But anyway, so it's interesting to me that that Curtiz is did The Breaking Point as a redo of To Have and Have Not. And when I watch, I'm going to be curious how far away he takes it from because he directed Casablanca.
Right.
So how distinct he makes it.
And apparently this movie is more true to the book than To Have and Have Not, the Hemingway novel. So it'd be interesting to see.
Yeah.
I could see this becoming a bit of an unsung release for Criterion, one that people they did tease it, but maybe one that folks aren't super excited about, but does get a lot of attention and acclaim. We'll see.
And they teased it with that pencil
breaking right.
So that was a lot of people thought that could be Point Break. Sorry guys, it's not Point Break,
but
so that one's confirmed. And speaking of the artwork, and by the way, Criterion is still not crediting the artist on the page. I don't know what's the deal with that, but
it's a bit of a bummer.
So Greg Ruth did this cover, and I don't know if you saw this, but he wrote a little blog post about really just the genesis of this the assignment to the creation, which was a really good read. Yeah. It turns out it was a rush job. They asked for it with basically a 1 week turnaround time. And so he had to just work with what he could. It made me wonder actually how it could, because a lot of people complain about cover art. That's something people, a lot of people like to complain. You kind of wonder sometimes if when people are just throwing all this animosity at cover art, and maybe some reputable artist, you wonder whether it's just because they only had 5 days. Although Greg, to his credit, he did say that Criterion is usually not a rush job kind of company. They usually give ample time.
I was thinking that too. I'm surprised that it was that you know, maybe a deal fell through with somebody else or something, or they didn't like what they produced, or, you know, who knows? We don't know. But
or maybe this was supposed to be a September, October release, and they bumped it up. They
pushed it up, yeah.
I'm sure this happens all the time. They're a company, so...
Yeah.
And, you know, this gives a little insight into how companies work. They need some things quickly. There's stress. I'm sure the 15th is mad stress at Criterion Studios.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's why it pushes to the next day sometimes.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. Probably Monday was very stressful. That's why. So anyway, let's move on. So the next one is Meantime. So we have Mike Lee coming out. Another one I haven't seen. And I've actually been looking forward to this one. We've expected it for a while. It was also hinted at. I actually hoped. I thought that High Hopes might come out as well, which is another early meet, Lee. Not as much excitement about this one. I've noticed. I'm excited. Any Mike Lee.
Yeah, absolutely, totally with you. You know, it's he's certainly a favorite of Criterion, and he's a favorite of mine. I actually did watch this last night with Stefan because it is on Filmstruck.
Okay,
so we dug into it, and I do hope the print looks a little better. It was a TV movie originally when it was released. I don't know if maybe it was shot on video. But it's a little bit rough. But again, it could be, you know, the age of it. It's from 1984. But yeah, it's a good movie. I mean, I don't think it's as engaging as some of his other stuff, but I do think it'll stick with you, and it has some great performances. I mean, Gary Oldman is in it, and Tim Roth, and Tim Roth is great. I think actually between the two, he was my favorite actor, and it's really Oldman's first major role. And you can see the influence of how I don't know the history, but I've got to think that Alex Cox saw this movie and then cast him for Sid and Nancy, because he plays a very similar character, really, you know, a punk, a skinhead.
And, you know, I don't know if we brought up this movie, but I know we talked about Oldman when we talked to him, and I'm sure there's some interview.
I can't remember.
I haven't gone back and listened to that show, but I know a couple of listeners have listened to it a few times. So we'll touch on that in a moment. I'm looking forward to it. I saw the description on Criterion is it's a slow burn. Is that
definitely?
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of Lee's. I mean,
that's his thing.
Yeah. They're all slow burns in a way, but watchable. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. This is definitely watchable. This may be one of the slowest burns of his. I'd put it up there with, I thought High Hopes was a pretty slow burn. I mean, some of his other movies like Naked and, you know, Secrets and Lies, I do think move at a quicker clip, so they're more easily engageable. But,
sure.
Yeah, this one certainly. I mean, it's only an hour and 45 minutes, and it is certainly worthy of inclusion in the collection. I was, you know, it would have been cool to maybe see it, you know, packaged like you said, like, you know, like an early Mike Lee or something like that. But yeah, it's certainly worthy. You can see his, how he. The way he likes to film actors, I think he does a lot of improvisation, and you can kind of see that in the dialogue. I mean, there's no way that he actually wrote all of this dialogue specifically.
Sure. Okay. Well,
so, yeah.
August 15th, we'll see that. Yeah. And also on August 15th is Hopscotch, which is a Ronald Neame. And boy, I love Ronald Neame. He's just such a blast.
Yes.
I don't think I've seen a film of his that I haven't been delighted by. And interesting cover. Speaking of covers, I've very divided responses.
I'm sure.
Some people don't like the caricature comic art type of style. Yeah. Some people love it. Speaking of rush jobs, this one probably didn't take as long as, say, Meantime. Meantime looked like a pretty elaborate illustration. So, have you seen Hopscotch?
I haven't. No, I've got the DVD, but never watched it. Have you seen it?
Yeah, actually, I watched it a few months ago on Filmstruck, actually, early in Filmstruck, and I think it was just a whim just to see it, something light, and that's what it is. It's light. It's, you know, Matthau and Glenda Jackson, kind of a spy thriller, sort of like a pseudo-Bond, like a really a Ronald Neame kind of James Bond tale. I thought it was good. I thought it was fun. You know, really what you would expect. It's a comedy. I would compare it like to The In-Laws. I think it's in that vein.
Okay.
But I think it's a good film, a fun film that, you know, if somebody wants, it's a Tuesday night film, there you go. Or maybe a date film, actually.
Right. Yeah, I actually thought about that for last night, but yeah, I don't know. The spy nature of it, I didn't think it would quite, you know, catch on. So, but it looks like there are some new supplements. There's an interview from 2002, but I think is new, that's not on the DVD. I was trying to do some comparison with Neim and the writer, Brian Garfield. And the Walter Matthau appearance on the Dick Cavett Show is also new.
Okay.
And the as far as the essays, one of the essays is new, the Glenn Kinney essay. The other one is by Bruce Etter, that's in the DVD. So, you know, definitely some new new stuff.
Yeah.
The DVD had a director approved sticker on it. So I'm not sure if we're going to get that with this one or not. But, yeah, I would assume so.
Ah, Ronald Neim, is he still around? I hate that I'm asking this. No, he passed in 2010, so probably not going to get that sticker.
May not get the sticker. Yeah,
I mean, definitely won't. But I did notice when I watched on Filmstruck that the print was fine, but it wasn't pristine. So this is a 2K restoration, so I would suggest waiting and watching the best format.
Yeah.
Just have a couple months. So moving right along. Oh, and I should have, speaking of supplements, the Mike Lee Meantime had a supplement with Jarvis Cocker, who's the lead singer of Pulp. So I'm curious where that goes. Was there a lot of music, pop music in Meantime? Or
No, there's just this recurrent, that I remember, there was just this recurring theme that came up. There really wasn't a lot of music.
Okay.
I don't remember any pop music. So
Pulp.
Oh, I shouldn't say that. There was one song that I didn't recognize when the boys are kind of hanging out. They're playing it too loud in their room. But other than that, I don't really remember much music.
Interesting. So, yeah, Pulp is they're basically the definition of indie pop or Britpop in the 90s. Really, them and Oasis were kind of at the core of that. So I'll be curious what he says. He seems like a very intelligent guy. He wears glasses. That means he's intelligent.
That
right?
means he's intelligent, obviously. Yeah.
So next we have a familiar filmmaker to me, and I think you, Sacha Guitry's La Poison, or is that how you say it?
I think so, yeah. I think you got it. Good French there.
Or Le Poison. La Poison. So this is a late Guitry, so not like his 30s work, although no, it kind of is like his 30s work in a way. It has that same comic vibe. It's very stagey. It's 1951. It's Michel Simon as well. So,
have you seen it?
I have. Yes, I watched the Masters of Cinema release.
Me too.
Okay, so do you like it?
I am a big fan. Okay. I would go so far as to saying I kind of love it. This one is, I mean, it's so black, but it's so good. You know, it's
very gallows humor here. I was surprised. So Criterion Forum is an interesting place, and there's one moderator named Domino Harvey that just had scathing, I should say poisonous, hate for this movie. And basically,
really?
Yeah. And a few people came and defended it. And I would say that among Guitry's filmography, I would say it's, you know, near the middle of what I've seen. But I was surprised. It's not a masterpiece, but again, kind of like Hopscotch, it's going to be fun and entertaining romp.
It's fun. Yeah. I rewatched the end just because I want, you know, for the show, just to get a sense of it. And I don't laugh out loud a lot of times at movies, but I just, the way that that ending is edited together and Simone up there just defending himself, it's hilarious. I love it. It's,
I really
took to this film.
I'm probably not a laugh out loud person either.
Exactly.
I mean, sometimes, but, so I probably didn't in this one, but you know, I think the way they put everything together, it's very stagey, you know, like a comedy, comedy play with the way it's written. So you can see where it's going for sure, but a mile away. But I think it's enjoyable seeing it get there, especially because of Simone. He's wonderful.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, this is the one I was thinking of. You know, even looking at the list, this is the one I'm most excited for people to check out if they haven't seen it yet. You know, as far as the Criterion community goes, a lot of fun. I don't know. you know, folks are probably familiar with him from the Eclipse set with his films from the 1930s. But for me, it was a bit of a breath of fresh air because it wasn't quite what I expected going into it. And I really liked the intro of the cast at the beginning, that he includes that in the film, or the cast and crew, I should say. I haven't seen any other director do that. And it does get a little long. It goes on for like 6 minutes, but you know, just him talking about the people and really giving everybody, even the people behind this, you know, the camera, their due is nice.
And also, speaking of Asayas, there's a special supplement with him talking about film. And I know some people are not big Asayas fans, or Asayas, however you say it. But I really enjoy his, when he does a Criterion supplement. So I think this will be interesting. I actually would be interested to see how this works in as far as his filmography, because I wouldn't think of him as being a Guitry kind of
comedic. Interested what the influences there.
Yeah. So anyway, then the last one. So we had 5 titles total, and maybe that's why some people were disappointed, because we're getting spoiled by box sets and and 20 titles in May, which we're dealing with now. But the last one,
upgrade. Yeah, I mean, out of print coming back.
This is kind of special for, I think, you and I as well, speaking of Alex Cox. So Sid and Nancy is coming back, and I don't know when we talked to Alex, maybe a year and a half ago or so. And I haven't, like I mentioned, I haven't re-listened, but we did talk about Sid and Nancy quite a bit, and I think we had a good conversation, even despite his phone connection. And I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to go listen to that episode. But he did talk about Sid and Nancy. He said that Criterion's DVD was the best presentation of it, so I'm sure he's thrilled to have it back here in a better better condition.
Yeah, I mean the DVD was non-anamorphic, so this will be a huge upgrade. But for the time, like you said, it was a really good presentation. Lots of supplements too.
Cool,
which are a lot of them are carried forward.
Of course. So. The one thing I would like to add is, I'm glad we have some more Alex Cox in the collection. I would really like Highway Patrolman. That's the one that came out a couple years after Walker. I forget what year, but he sold me on that one pretty well, and it doesn't have a release. So I think Criterion, if you're listening, that's worth a shot, and I think it probably could be had. I don't, because he's very independent. I doubt if there's a rights issue with that, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's BFI did put that out, so I may even be out of print, but they only put it out on DVD. So,
I don't know the materials, the condition of it, but if they can get that, I have a feeling the Criterion could. Would love to see that. I think even though Alex Cox went independent, kind of has been doing some underground work lately, I think especially his 80s, 90s work is definitely very important. And as a scholar, I mean, he's bar none. Nobody holds a candle to him.
Yeah, agreed. Well, and we should certainly take some credit for this coming back to Criterion, don't you think? Because we
absolutely
did talk to Alex.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm sure Peter Becker listened to that and was like, what am I thinking? Of course.
Yeah, and let me get that out there.
So, please. Peter, you know, if you're listening to this, this needs to happen. And we're going to take credit again in 18 months or whatever it is. Just make it happen.
Yeah, this should be a nice upgrade too. I mean, just, you know, going to a new 4K, transfer plus the original DVD, like I said, was non-anamorphic and it was only stereo. This is a nice 5.1 soundtrack. So of course, you know, with the punk soundtrack, that will be great. This was huge for me too. I'm probably just going to donate my DVD to my brother, who I don't think owns it, because this is one of those movies that he introduced me to probably too young and really was my entry point into punk music. I started listening to the Pistols, you know, from this and the Ramones. So I definitely have an affinity for this film.
Cool. Well, and we're joking about taking credit. Really, it has nothing to do with us, but we like to pat ourselves on the back. So
of course we should.
All right. Well, I guess that's the new releases. I think they're fine. Yeah, we've had a decent year. I think this year is not up to the scale of last year, even if May was pretty huge and June was good too. But I'm fine with this month.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, there's some good stuff there. Yeah. I mean, I don't until I've seen all the films and really put it together. I mean, I don't really care. Just give me a bunch of good stuff. I don't care when it's released. And they always do quality work. But watching some more of these films, once I've seen Hopscotch and The Breaking Point, I'm sure I'll look back and say, oh, yeah, another great month. Always solid. Yep. Always solid.
So, all right. Well, that was interesting month. Let's get to the poll. So in Criterion Now, in the Facebook group, we asked which title people were most excited for. And really interesting results here. I was kind of all over the place. And so number one was Hopscotch. So... which I'm not surprised by. I think Hopscotch is a crowd pleaser, so you could expect people would dig that, look forward to it. The second one was Sid and Nancy. So actually, I expected Sid and Nancy would be the cream de la cream of this.
I would have too, yeah.
And although it's pretty close, and that Sid and Nancy is what I voted for, by the way. Maybe a little selfishly, because self-serving because right. of our Alex Cox connection. And then The Breaking Point was right behind that, I think by one vote. These were all separated by a couple votes. And then La Poison was right I think that was actually tied with The Breaking Point. So.
Yeah, it looks like it was. Yeah.
And then last with one vote is Mean Time. So nobody cares about Mike Lee.
Lee. I think people like Mike Lee, just maybe, you know, because it's early Mike Lee, it was a TV movie, who knows.
But, yeah. Oh, and we'll say one and a third vote for Mean Time, because Cole in the comments said that he had a third of a vote for La Poison, Breaking Point, and Mean Time. So there you go.
That's fair.
Some
Thanks,
really
Cole.
Really interesting comments on there. So that'll be a new thing. We'll do that forever. The group's been great. Somebody got the Tarkovsky set. We'll be talking about Tarkovsky more soon. But Artificial Eye came out with a Region B set. I have a feeling I know somebody that ordered it.
Yes, it's on its way. I just hope Amazon UK packed it well enough so it doesn't arrive, all dinged up. We'll see.
Well, if in case it does and it's shredded, you can go into the group and he posted pictures of it. So
yeah,
it looks like a beautiful set.
It's gorgeous.
I passed because there might be some Criterion versions. We'll talk about that here in a second. We have some new arrivals since the last time we recorded. We have Gene Dillman, I guess. Yeah, it's Gene. Or is that
how? I think so.
Yeah, I know I had it wrong last time. So so that came out the week before last, and I haven't watched that yet. And then Good Morning came out this week, and Deepan comes out next week. So that's something to look forward to. You want to just go ahead and get into Good Morning?
Yeah, let's do it. I did just want to mention for Gene Dillman, what Michael Hutchins recommended on the Facebook group is to not break this up into more than one sitting. So I'm going to take that to heart. I'm going to schedule this sometime when I have 3.5 hours to watch it. So just mentioning that.
With all due respect to Mr. Hutchins, impossibly. I love this film, and I'm looking forward to revisiting. I actually almost did this one instead of Van Gogh, but Van Gogh. But Gene Dillman has to be broken up a little bit. It's terrific, absolutely. But it's hopefully we'll talk about that in the next episode or the one after. So anyway, we have a good morning. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you.
About Ozu, who'd have thunk?
I know. So so you just watched this recently, right? This was actually my first, as I'd mentioned on the Ozu episode where we talked about late spring, this was my first Ozu, which cool. seemed like a good entry point.
You know, I thought this was my first Ozu because I bought the DVD back, around when it came out, and I still have it. In fact, I'm looking at it. I don't know what I'm going to do with it now because it probably is not the best print, but you know, I thought I did, and when I watched it, I realized I'd never seen it before. So, I guess you see so many Ozus. I'm not going to say they blend together, but I guess I thought they blended together. But this one's pretty distinctive.
Yeah, for sure.
Press
How
my
did it look.
Press my forehead, Mark. it did look good. Have you had a chance to watch the release or not yet?
No, I haven't got. I'm probably going to wait for a few of these new releases till the Barnes & Noble sale.
Makes sense.
But yeah. I watched the DVD, which, sure, it's not the greatest print, but a 4K restoration, I'm sure, looks great.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Ozu waited a while for color, and because he, when he passed, he didn't get to do too many color films, but boy, he could direct it in color, and the new print really, really brings that out. I mean, it's not like sparkling, but yeah, in fact, I watched the David Bordwell thing as well. I would watch David Bordwell reading the phone book, basically, but sure. he talked about how saturated with light Ozu painted his frame, so you get really, really intense deep focus, and that really comes through on this print. It really looks great. Of course, the camera still doesn't move. It's still, you know, on the floor, and there's some more exteriors than I'm used to from late Ozu.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, a lot of fart jokes, which definitely the funniest and more and lightest and most humorous. And although I would say that Ozu does have his sense of humor. We've seen it here and there in some films. I think in Autumn Afternoon, there's a lot. But yeah, I did enjoy it. It's not my favorite Ozu in the world. I think Bordwell described it as minor Ozu. I don't know if I would go that far, although
interesting.
I might say there's no such thing as minor Ozu. I still think it's spectacular. But yeah, I did enjoy it. So your memory of the DVD, do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, I liked the film a lot. Watching it, it really wasn't quite what I was expecting, but, you know, kind of told me if this is what Ozu is, I need to watch some more. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I haven't seen anything with quite the same comedy as this one, but you know, one thing I really did relate to today too. I mean, you've got kids wanting a TV, and you can really relate that to anything today. You know, if they want an iPhone or you know, some kind of other device, and you know, I can understand them getting quiet, not really wanting to talk to their parents, which you know, kids are wont to do. But I think it also gets to the relationship of siblings too, just that ability to relate that they have. They have a closeness due to their closeness in age, but even if they, you know, they do fight also. Mm-hmm. So I think he really captures that that relationship well. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I know Dave Eves, our friend and often a contributor on Criterion Now and Close Up. He recently called this his favorite Ozu. So
I saw that. Yeah. So yeah, I'm not quite there, but I do see the power, and I do like when Ozu has young boys, because I think that's almost always autobiographical.
Yeah, it's got to be him.
Yeah, and it probably reflects on his childhood. I don't know. I don't even know if he had a sibling, but he does capture the brotherhood, literal brotherhood, very well. And actually, speaking of which, I also got a chance to watch the bonus film, which is just amazing that it's on there. Which was I Was Born But, one of his most celebrated. I think Matt mentioned it on our Ozu episode. And it's a silent film, 32, but it's basically not the same story, but a similar story. There is the silent treatment segment, although it's not as pronounced. That's not the main narrative, which I think in Good Morning it is, the main our plot point. But it's more just about kids growing up, and there's some class differences. There's a lot about parenthood and about you know, leaving a legacy for the legacy of your children compared to that of the parents, and and actually, really, the plot element doesn't really come into play until the third act, I think that's when it's strongest. But a lot of that is because it's built on the first two acts, which is really just the rapport between the two kids. So yeah, I was stunned by this. I think this is up there with his best work, and I see why it's held to such a pedestal. Have you seen I Was Born But?
I haven't, no. Waiting for this release.
It is silent, and it's on the Eclipse as well. And I did see it on Blu-ray. I'm sure it was better, but it seemed like it probably wasn't much better, but you know, maybe more convenient. You just few clicks rather than opening that box. But yeah, no, definitely worth your while. It also has a straightforward boy, or at least part of a straightforward boy, and I did not get to that, because if you weren't listening, I watched four movies yesterday, and this was two of them. So, but yeah, quite a release, beautiful cover. I would recommend this, even if you're not a huge Ozu fan. I think people will be surprised by how accessible Actually, really both of these for a silent film as well. Yeah.
Excellent.
Especially if you like fart jokes. Who doesn't like fart jokes, Mark?
Everybody does. If they don't, they should. I just noticed this one. Well, no, that's right. This is. I'm thinking this one does list who the cover artist is. The new one. It's the new ones that don't.
So, I think it's the last couple months they stopped doing that. So I'm hoping that's just an oversight.
All
right.
They'll add them later.
Let's move on from Ozu, which is difficult to do, and get to Michael Haneke.
It's a good transition right there. Those two are just two peas in a pod.
Yeah, that's right. And in a way, with a little there's a little bit more agita in Haneke's films, but
a little bit.
So a little surprise on Instagram. I love these little nuggets on Instagram from Criterion. Criterion had a picture of Michael Haneke, and it's him smiling, and it says, "A happy Haneke in Vienna last week." And it looks like a still from a interview of some sort.
I missed that.
Yeah. So I think this hints, well, no, I'm certain this hints at a release coming up. And we've talked about how we think there's a good chance for a lot more Haneke in the horizon after Code Unknown.
Sure.
You know, hopefully in the awnings. I don't know. What do you think?
A lot of the early Haneke is out of print from Kino. I think we mentioned that during the when we talked about Code Unknown. But yeah, Seventh Continent, Benny's Video, all of those, I believe, are still out of print. And so, yeah, I could see a box set coming. 71 Fragments of a Chronology. I think the original Funny Games, all out of print. So, yeah.
Okay.
That's my pick, is it's just some of the early. Either they're going to release them separately if they feel like they're big enough, or maybe a Haneke box set.
The early Haneke box set. That has a nice ring to it.
Yeah. So, there we go.
I'd be cool with Cachet. So I don't think Cachet has a Blu-ray here.
It's funny you say that. Yeah, there's one in the UK, but there's not one here. Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be
another great pick.
Wonderful. And I think that would be a more popular title. I'm sure Haneke has his fans. And yeah, Funny Games would be popular as well. Actually, it'd be interesting if he paired his Funny Games. Well, it is. They're both his. But I guess Belgium or whatever country he shot that in with the American version.
Definitely see him doing that, you know, Criterion doing that, having the two together.
Kind of like a Lower Depths thing, but with the same director. Yeah. I wonder if he's proud of the second Funny Games. I thought it was good. I mean, it's basically shot by shot.
I like them both a lot.
Me too, really. But I like them both differently. I don't know. It's hard to hard to explain. But
So and maybe the White Ribbon, but I doubt it, because that's still in print from Sony, it looks like. So I think you're right. I bet it's either – I'd go with either a Cachet or early early Haneke box set. The only other one I'm thinking of is maybe The Piano Teacher, because I don't think that one has gotten a Blu-ray release in the U.S. either. And that's a beloved film.
Man, you're hitting me where it hurts, man. Let's just everything Haneke all the time. Criterion, please, all of it.
Yep, we'll take it.
I'm going to put you on silent treatment until you give me all Michael Haneke's films.
The complete Haneke.
The complete Haneke, all of it, including the one at Cannes, which I'm going to mention. It would be nice to keep fantasizing about great Haneke films. There's lots of them, but we'll move on. So another, speaking of Phantom Pages.
Let's fantasize about Alex Ross Perry.
Alex Ross Perry was mentioned. I don't know if I'm going to fantasize as much.
Not so much. Well,
not as much as Haneke, for sure. All right, Alex Ross Perry. I don't think his stuff is anywhere Blu-ray.
None of it.
In the U.S.
None of it in the U.S. Yeah, Queen of Earth is, and Listen Up, Philip, Masters of Cinema have done, but nothing in the U.S.
And I'd say he's a promising auteur. I've gone on record with my reservations about Queen of Earth. It's well done, very good performance, but nobody wants to watch that.
That is not a fun movie.
Not at all. In fact, I would say The Piano Teacher and The White Ribbon are more pleasant.
Fun than that.
They're like that's like WALL-E compared to Queen of Earth.
I kind of want to see it again for the performances, but there's just nothing. fun about that movie. I think I watched that with my wife as what I thought would be a date movie. And I think she was just in a bad mood after. I can't play.
You messed up, man. That is not that. That is the anti-date movie if I've ever seen it. Maybe watching it again, having gotten through that and the aftermath of how horrific a movie that is, maybe it's okay. Maybe you could then see the art. There is art in it. It's very well done. Yeah, it's a great. Elizabeth Moss and Catherine Waterston.
Waterston,
that's great, right, back. Yeah. It's a very Persona-ish, but
yes,
like on crack, basically. one I would recommend people watch, but I wouldn't, you know. And then, have you seen Listen Up, Philip?
I haven't. No, that's Masters of Cinema 2, and it's funny. The Blu-ray.com has Tribeca Film listed as the distributor, but no release date. So, you know, who knows? Maybe that's a future criterion.
Is that on the that Tribeca Amazon streaming service? I think it's its own streaming service.
Oh,
but
maybe
it has an Amazon. I don't know. I haven't checked, but I have seen it. I think I blind bought the Masters of Cinema just out of curiosity before I saw Queen of Earth.
Right.
But I watched it anyway, and I think I just watched it somewhere else. I don't have that. I hope I don't have that. Listen Up, Philip is not Queen of Earth. It's more. It made me think of Philip Roth, and in fact, I wonder if it's based on Philip Roth, the author. So it's based on kind of a. It kind of reminds me of what was the bomb back about the author with Pink Floyd? It came out recently. Jesse Eisenberg.
Squid and the Whale?
Yeah, Squid and the Whale.
Okay.
I don't know why. That's not exactly a unique title, but it kind of reminded me of that, maybe a little more contentious. I think it was Jason Schwartzman, and I forget the actor who played the other author, the Roth character. And it may not be Roth. I might just be projecting it, because he's kind of known as a surly author. I think he drinks. I don't sue me, Philip Roth. I don't know. I'm just making this up from memory. I bet it was okay. If I were to predict a criterion, I don't think this would be it. I think Queen of Earth probably
would be the pick.
Yeah. So something, or it could be something on Filmstruck. Who knows?
Yeah, could be a Color Wheel too. I mean, I remember that one being when that one came out. That one hitting a lot of critics' lists. So maybe that's just the easiest one to pick up. But who knows?
Yeah, I think he's now become like an IT director. So I think. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not quite converted, but I think he's interesting at least. Even if Queen of Earth is just carnage. Listen Up, Philip's okay. So sorry, we got a lot of show to get to. So let's move on. One thing that was really cool, and I don't know if you had a chance to check this out. If you don't, I recommend you spend a week or two diving into it. But there's a new column on Criterion called The Daily, by a gentleman named David Hudson, and he has written for a number of places. He wrote for Green Scene, and then he did IFC Daily, Daily Movie, and he wrote for Fandor for a long time. It seems like this is what he's doing for Criterion is basically his thing. He kind of writes stuff going on in the film world. It kind of reminded me of Ryan Gallagher. He posts his links of everything in
the links, the daily links.
Mm-hmm. So maybe like Ryan's links, but with a little more commentary. The coolest thing is he has been going through the Cannes lineup, and posting a film at a time, and he'll kind of summarize the critical consensus. So, for example, there's the Netflix film Ovka. It's by the guy that did The Host, the Korean director. Netflix one that, you know, they booed Netflix. So like that one, for example, he talks about that and how it's kind of getting a decent reaction, but there's the Netflix thing.
Sure.
And like, say, the Todd Haynes is pretty good, but it seems like a little bit of a departure. I was actually commenting to my wife how there's really not one place to just follow Cannes and see what's good and what's not. But who'd have thunk that place is now Criterion.com.
And he's releasing quite a few each day. I mean, it's daily. It's the daily, but there's a lot of them. It's not like it's one post per day.
I know.
Looking at it now.
David,
so that's great.
It I don't know what has consumed you. I don't know what caffeine you're drinking, but let me have some. That's doing great work. So I don't know if he'll probably won't listen, but thank you, David, for all that you've done. And I'll be reading a lot of this in the weeks, hopefully months and years to come. So and we'll put a link up. I noticed that he had, in fact, just today, we're recording on a Sunday, he put a link to the an index of the can titles. So I'll put that link in the show notes if people want to check it out. But yeah, go to Criterion's website and read more of that.
He just, if folks are digging into Twin Peaks, as of listening to this, he just posted Twin Peaks Returns. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm sure we'll have plenty to say about Twin Peaks in the weeks and months to come. So yeah, good stuff. It seems like original content had been missing since Kareski left. He was doing the Eclipse titles, but he did some original content. There were some other good writers there. Kim Morgan, I think, has done some, although she's done essays. But yeah, it seems like this is it fills a hole, fills a need. So thank you.
Yeah, this is a great get for Criterion too. You know, just putting this, I mean, probably a great get for both of them. But this is fantastic. It'll definitely drive additional traffic to the website. So that's great.
And it's nice just have an outlet for film writing. And I hope they're paying him well, Criterion.
Yes.
If you're not, please give him a raise. He's awesome.
Hey, David.
So he's probably gonna. If he listens, he's gonna be very appreciative. anyway, I'm looking forward to following this, and I'm sure that it'll come up again. It sounds like this will be a nice reference around our viewings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, that was the daily. So now we're at the part of the show where we do our short takes. That's just a movie we've seen recently, and this was during the week, and this is a weird. My choice is a weird one for during the week, but Mark, what did you see?
Well, I had asked you just not too long ago, with us getting into the Umbrellas of Cherbourg soon on Criterion Close Up, how I should watch the Jacques Demy box set, because I had not seen a single Jacques Demy film. And, you know, with our friend Scott and I talking about it, he's one of his favorites. It was just a great excuse to dig into it. And so I asked you and you said, go in order. So I went in order. usually you have good advice, Aaron, I would say most of the time.
Thank
so, you.
You
know, I followed it. So I went through the box set, of course, starting with the Lola disc, which has all the shorts on it too. So I actually started chronologically through the shorts, got into Lola. And yeah, it's really the best way to, I think, to consume Demy, because his films really are all part of a kind of a single world, French world there. So it's nice to see how things kind of progress. And I like this film a lot. There is an issue with the restoration. There was the original camera negative was destroyed, so this was created destroyed in a fire in 2000. So this restoration was 2012. So it doesn't hold up to the look of some of the other films in those restorations, but is still good to see and is certainly worthwhile. I think the film itself really is, and I think this is kind of a through line for Demy as far as themes go. It's about chance encounters a lot. You kind of see people flittering in and out of the film and not really of the film and the frame, not really quite connecting. I think there's certainly some said about post-war because the mother and the daughter talk of post-war and how she's lost everything, including her husband. So you see that a lot in French film, I think. This is also there is certainly an influence of it was kind of reminded of Rivette in this way, except I think Demy is a lot easier to watch and certainly more popular in that just creating that world for his characters that they inhabit and the chance encounters and pass crossing. I think Rivette does get into that too. You know, we saw that in Out One.
And Demi's not 20 hours.
Right. Yeah, exactly. He's just, he's much more well-paced. Consumable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you like Lola?
I like it a lot. I mean, I think I probably liked each film so far better. as I've gotten into Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and I'm gonna complete the box set. I've got to pick up Young Girls of Rochefort and, you know, continue from there. But yeah, I think it's great. I you know, the through line I saw was the resilience of the heartbroken, per the Criterion site, and I think that really starts with the first film. Le Horizon Mort is kind of the same, a young man suffering from a broken heart, which you see in Lola. So yeah, it's a ton of fun. I'm so glad I delved into this box set. He is absolutely an important French director, and you know, kind of forgotten in the French New Wave, and but just lovely. I can't wait to show Umbrellas to my daughter. She's going to love it.
Cool.
So, thumbs up to Demi.
There was, speaking of hate and complaining, there was plenty of complaining when that came out, because Lola was in poor condition.
Right.
But the thing is, you can't leave Lola out. I mean,
right.
And in fact, you'll see as you keep on going, it continues to pay off. And it's,
I believe,
like you said, Demi has his own world, yeah. And then he has Donkey Skin, which is kind of a different world. But I don't know if I'd watch that with your daughter. It's, I don't know, it's weird.
I'll preview it first.
It's a fantasy world, but there's a little bit of an incestual vibe. So yeah, I would read the synopsis first.
Sure.
So all right, well, mine.
How about you?
Mine is actually, I revisited my first Godard. The first Godard I ever saw, which was Vivre Sa Vie, My Life to Live. So this was, like I said, the first Godard, probably circa 20 years ago, maybe longer, maybe give or take a few. And I remember everybody's like, oh, Godard this, Godard that. And I was young and thinking, oh, these pretentious film snobs, basically talking in my 40s.
I'll never be one of those.
Something self. Everybody's talking about Godard. Let me just find a movie and find out what it's all about. And I put this on, and I was basically like, WTF.
Okay, sure.
All right, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. And so I didn't like Godard. And I continued to not like Godard for a while. And actually, I kind of still don't like Godard. You know, I respect Godard, and I love certain films of his, but you know, I don't put him on the same pedestal as other filmmakers, but I do appreciate and respect him and appreciate what he did and how he kind of broke some of the barriers in filmmaking, which is actually what he does in Vivre Sa Vie very exceptionally. But I would prefer like Weekend or I'm drawing blanks on movies. What's the one?
Contempt, Breathless.
Contempt, not Breathless as much, but Band of Outsiders and
Band of Outsiders. Yeah, I can't forget that.
What's the out of print one?
Pierre LeFou.
Pierre LeFou. Yeah, that's probably near the top. So yeah, I like plenty of his. I don't know why I can't remember film titles today. So watching this again, I appreciated it a little more, and I was able to get past the experiments and admire them somewhat. I think he does a good job of navigating the frame, and everything's deliberate. You know, there's not...
Sure.
You know, if something's a little bit out of frame, it's not because he messed up. It's because he wanted it a little bit out of frame. He wants... And of course, the infamous shot of the back of her head, his paramour's head... why am I forgetting her name? Boy.
pulling her. Oh, Anna Karenina.
Of course, Anna Karenina. Yeah. The delightful Anna Karenina. And
yes.
And there's some commentary, you know, probably a little bit misogynist now, maybe walking that tightrope, or even then, really. I don't think he was the most highly evolved person when it came to women, but... Yeah, there's a little commentary on dating versus prostitution, so... Yeah, take that for what it is. So I would say I appreciate it a lot more this time around. I still don't like this movie. I think I put like 3.5 stars on Letterboxd, so that's my token of admiration. But I know some people love this film. For a lot of people, this is their favorite. Okay, and I respect that.
I'd say probably this and Contempt are my two favorites. You know, for Godard. I think this was actually, I'd have to look back. I think this might actually have been my first Godard too. We were going to watch it as part of a movie group, and I missed it. And I just was just taken with it. I think part of it was I love the soundtrack, the chapter stops, the, mm-hmm. the influence. I see a huge influence on Tarantino in this film. So,
And I think there is something to be said for entry points, you know, like back to your Lola.
Exactly.
This is not the entry point for Godard, even if it worked for you. I would say that, actually, I kind of even think that Breathless might not be the entry point. I think maybe Pierre Le Fou.
I think you're right.
Or maybe Contempt might be. And then,
yeah.
Or maybe if you want to get into like the fanciful, experimental, maybe Band of Outsiders.
Because... I was going to say Band of Outsiders is an easy one. Yeah, I mean Contempt is just such a tough story. It's so gorgeous, and it needs a Criterion Blu-ray. So,
yeah, I think it's in Studio Canal Hell. So,
yes, it is.
So, all right. So that's Godard. Filmstruck. It's been 2 weeks since I've done a show, so there's a ton here, and there's no way I'm going to get through all of it. So I'm going to have to kind of condense a little bit. We're not going to do speed rounds. Sorry, Mark.
Oh, okay. So you're not just going to read all the say hello and say adieu titles for everyone?
No. In fact, I'm just going to read all the titles here, about 50. We'll just do a big speed round. No.
Right.
Well, so I'll start with the main channel, and I'm just going to say, I'll get to there when I get there. So the big thing came out this week, and it's the Masters, Andrei Tarkovsky.
Oh,
his entire life's work, which is amazing that you can put that in a little easy to click through library like that. So everything he's done is on Filmstruck, and I checked it out, and a lot of them have that C at the beginning of the film.
They do. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Not all of them, yeah. Sacrifice and Nostalgia, looks like they don't. I didn't check every single one, but...
I don't think the first film, Steamroller and the Violin, did either.
It did.
Oh, it did.
Yes,
nice.
It did. So,
I wonder if that means that, you know, that would be a really good supplement for on something, you know. So maybe that's where that's coming from.
Yeah, well, there is that Andrei Rublev drum that's been beating for two something years, maybe three. I haven't been keeping track, but
it's gonna be a pretty big drum because that thing's been beating for so long. It's
the thing is with Rublev though, that's a long movie, so that would be tough to fit on. It might be a double discer, but you know, I think it deserves a double disc. I'd say make it happen.
Yeah,
but because
maybe on the mirror or Nostalgia.
Nostalgia did not have Criterion, so I think that's still Kino. In fact, it had Kino as the
that makes sense. Yeah,
or you know, Tarkovsky's big enough that I think you could justify a short. I think is what like 45 minutes or something.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
Only 45 minutes. Maybe that with directed by Andrei Tarkovsky. That doesn't have the C on it either, but I don't know. Conjecturing. It's hard to say. Kino has The Sacrifice too. I think they still have the rights to that. So.
Which is interesting. Mirror. I think we've known Mirror has been on Criterion for a while, but it had the C. I verified. I didn't look through and watch the print. I want to save that for that fateful day that I get to watch that in high def. Andrei Tarkovsky. So thrilled.
Yeah, if you want to dig into some Tarkovsky, there it is. I mean, it's everything. It makes me wonder how long this is going to last, especially for the titles that aren't on Criterion. So now might be the time to go on a Tarkovsky binge.
Yeah. So if you're, I don't know if you're watching Twin Peaks or whatever, but you might want to put it aside, unless you're patient. But yeah, and I should mention that movies are still cycling in and out, and I'm going to put a couple links in the show notes. There's Coming Soon and Movies Leaving, and the Coming Soon actually has movies that are just arrived and movies leaving. I would expect that probably all of these will leave the main channel, and some of them are already in the Criterion channel. And the last two, the Kino ones, I think will leave for sure within a short time period. Again, people complain. It's like... Maybe we should. That should be a segment. Complain time. addressing
just
the
get
complaints.
It out there and move forward.
But people complain about movies moving in and out of Filmstruck. But I'm actually okay with it. It seems like there's plenty enough arriving, and we'll get to the Criterion Channel. There were some big dumps. So So anyway, I'm fine with the amount of the level of content. There's plenty more than I could ever watch.
Oh, there's so much content. I mean, that's the thing. It is disappointing, but this is the world we live in. That's streaming content. Is it comes in and then it leaves. I mean, look at Mubi. Right. That's what they do. They curate a film for a month, and you have 30 films to watch, and then it's gone. So, you know, it's one way to get your movie fix is to just subscribe to the service and just go with it and watch as much as you can. I mean, there's just a ton of content. And then if you need to own the film, buy it, and then you'll have it forever.
You will have it forever. So, yeah. And if you want to, watch something, watch it. So especially on the Criterion channel, the main channel, Criterion channel is a little more stable, but you know, those, digital spines, those have expiration dates, so jump on them if you want. Anyway, there are three other groupings that arrived in the last couple weeks, and I'm just going to kind of roll through these real quick. We have U-Boat Classics, which is films with boats. U-Boats, who'd have thunk?
Yeah.
So there's some PAL films, there's Das Boot, and there's Les Maudits, René Clément. So that's neat. And then there's Icons, Romy Schneider, which has a lot of films. She was in a lot of films. And I haven't seen a lot of these. So Romy Schneider, there you are. And then there were Actors as Directors, which had more modern films. I remember there was George Clooney. Benigni, Roberto Benigni, and some others. The one thing, if you look at Filmstruck, these new one curated lists might not be at the top. So,
some of them have already moved down. It's because they're adding new stuff all the time.
Yep. Oh, Sling Blade, of course, is on there. So, any thoughts from these three groupings?
U-Boats? Well, I do like some French fried potatoes. Sorry. I thought the U-Boats one is great. That's Das Boot. Mm-hmm. Watched that, I think, just for the first time after college, and it's one of my favorite war movies. It's just fabulous. So pairing some of these, I probably won't get to them, but I wish I could. I'd binge all of these because I didn't even know some of these had a U-Boat through line. So that's a great one.
Yeah.
I like that one a lot.
I do like the Michael Powell editions and the Das Boot. It has, I think there's a director's cut as well. It's been a long time since I've seen that. So, not going to revisit it today or anytime soon. So it probably will be expired by the time I get to it, but there you go. Too much, too many choices until I retire and I can watch four movies every day.
Every single day.
That's when I can keep up on Filmstruck, 20 years from now, guys.
Yep.
Maybe a little more. Let's get to the Criterion channel. And I'm just going to say that we have to condense here. So I'm going to cut out the double features and the short plus features. I'll just list them off. We had Borum Serret and Black Girl, which already talked about on Criterion Now episode 4. So because they were both on the disc. We also had the Butterlamp and Yigi, which is amazing. I didn't watch Butterlamp, though.
Yeah, I did check out Butterlamp because I figured, I have Filmstruck. I need to watch a short. It's great. That's all I'll say. It's short. It's a lot like – it reminded me of Monica Mana, the film that came out a few years ago, about the people going up and down in the gondola.
Oh, okay. So, I haven't seen that. Yeah. So does it pair well with Yigi?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about pictures. And people's faces in this case, rather than the back of their heads. Definitely a good pairing and a nice introduction too. So 15 minutes, it's definitely worth your time. I liked it.
You know, Yee would pair well with Vivre Sa Vie.
Vivre Sa Vie. Yeah, that's right.
We just curated it. Good job.
Max of heads.
So when we do our streaming service and we steal the rights from Criterion, that's what we
right.
That's our first double feature. So speaking of double features, we had two of them. There was Ingrid Bergman in Her Own Words and Chantal Ackerman's News from Home, which was her final film. I have to think we're going to get News from Home someday. It keeps on coming back. I think it's been on the service twice now and expired. Then the other one was A Man Escaped and La Haine. So good pairings. I haven't seen News from Home yet, so I don't get that connection. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't either. No, I haven't.
All right, and then there's some features, and I think these were both on the discs. So again, I'll just kind of go through these. There was John Bailey and Haskell Wexler on Days of Heaven, and there was also Blow Up of Blow Up, a 2016 documentary about Blow Up, which I think I saw when I watched the disc. So there you go. If you want just a highlighted supplement.
Just the doc. There it is.
Just the doc. There it is. So anyway, okay, we had Digital Spines, and I guess I'll race through these as well. Why not? Secret of the Grain, also known as Couscous, which has that big belly dancing scene. Seen it?
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, I do too. Yep. I love his work, even though
everything's
controversy. Yeah. I'm looking forward to what he's coming out with next. Does he have a film at Cannes?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Yeah. No. I don't know what's in the pipe for him. I think he takes a little while to make his films. And then we had Fish Tank, which is kind of in the same tone, and you know, it's very realistic and lower class. So
And it's nice it has all the short films. I haven't watched everything, but I think you were talking about it. One of them is it Wasp? That's great. Yeah. That was Oscar nominated. Yeah,
those were on the disc. And actually, I watched the disc, but I didn't watch the short. So I just saw that when it came to Filmstruck. Andrea Arnold is definitely my wheelhouse, and I've liked
same here.
Everything of hers. Did you like American Honey?
We've been giving that a lot of love. I know. I think Matt Gasteyer just mentioned it on some of the Facebook groups. And yeah, I loved it. I popped it in. I was surprised by that the reviews of it weren't as high being Andrea Arnold. And so I had lower expectations, and the movie flies by, and it's just gorgeous. It's lovely. It's just a wonderful slice of life. Everyone should check it out.
Yeah, I was.
I know you're in the same boat.
I was very taken with it. So yeah, go check it out. So the next grouping, I think really the only grouping in the last couple weeks, was Boot at Cannes, and that's kind of coincidental because, well, it's deliberate. Cannes going on,
right.
But
sure.
There was controversy about Netflix, and actually I want to touch on that. So first the Boot at Cannes, there have been a lot of good movies that have been Boot at Cannes, I think inexplicably. And I'll just list these five are La Ventura. Yeah, piece of shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, terrible.
Gertrude, L'Argent, Sweetie, and Antichrist. Now, I can see the arguments against a couple of these, but yeah. I'm not.
Yeah, of the ones I've seen, I like them all, so there.
Me too. I know. I think when we talked about Antichrist, I think I looked up the films that were booed at Cannes, and it was a very large list of great, great films. Booed doesn't mean terrible.
It probably means it's a good film.
Might, yeah. It might. Well, I think The Brown Bunny was booed. Maybe that's a good movie. I don't know. Yeah. And anyway, I want to, since we're on that subject, Netflix was booed when the and I'm going to look up that title. I think it's Okja.
Yeah, that's what it is. Okja.
I don't know how I pronounce that.
Bong Joon-ho.
So it was pretty well received, but there were, I think, two films distributed by Netflix, and there was a big. Not big, but a controversy with Will Smith and Almodovar, who are both on the jury. They kind of had, it was labeled as an argument by the press, but of course, you know, they sensationalize everything, especially Cannes. But I think it was really just two differing opinions. But Almodovar said that film should be seen in the theater, and he didn't think a Netflix film deserved the Palme d'Or because it wouldn't, they'll get theatrical release, but they're mostly going to be seen on the small screen.
Right. Just because it's Netflix.
Right. Whereas Will Smith said, you know, things are changing. You have to embrace it. This is the way things are going. TV movies are okay. And I thought they both had good arguments. And I saw most people at least in our social media groups, most people seem to favor Will Smith's side. Before I give my take, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, for me, film is whatever you make of it. So I don't have an opinion either way. I mean, if I was going to lean one way or the other, I'd go the Will Smith way of, you know, go with it. I mean, you have to watch films. If you like films, you have to watch them any way you can. If you're someone that can get to the theater all the time, spend the money, see them on the big screen, that's great. If you have other responsibilities, raising my hand, I need to watch some movies at home, and right, I don't want to miss out on stuff. So, you know, this one, I actually don't have Netflix. So if it comes locally, I'll probably go see it in the theater. So there you go, Mr. Almodovar.
So let me throw a wrench in this now, because Okja, and I don't know if you're a fan of the director,
Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah.
Yep.
He seems up your
definitely
alley.
Definitely a fan.
So it's Netflix is distributing this nationwide, and that means there will be no physical release. It'll only play on Netflix. And this happened with Beast of No Nation. And I'd have to check. There might be a Region B somewhere, but most likely this film will not get a physical release anywhere. Mm. So,
yeah, that's a bit of a bummer.
This is where the argument is gets a little muddy. Netflix, it's in their interest to kill physical media, and they don't release their shows very much. I think House of Cards has come out. I think some of the Marvel shows have come out on DVD.
Right.
But mostly the films don't. I still haven't watched Beast of No Nation because it's all Netflix. Let's say fast forward 20 years and everything's on Netflix. Can is Netflix, and none of them get released. I don't know. I know we like our physical media, but
right.
So does that change your outlook?
All I care about is access, really. I mean, if there's a way to see a film, then fine. You know, I don't really care either way. I think that's part of the problem with all the streaming services and physical copies that go in and out of print. The thing is, even if they were to print it, it could go out of print in 3 years and be out of print for 5 years or 10 years. I don't care, as long as people are able to see the film. So I guess my concern would be, if there is no physical copy and something happens to Netflix, what happens to their content? I mean, I assume someone will pick it up and buy it and distribute it or whatever, you know, 20 years down the line. So, yeah, doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, it's hard to predict the future, but I think Netflix is here to stay. They're doing pretty well.
Right.
Well, I love physical media, and I don't know if I'm change if the times are going to surpass me, but I have to give a resounding boo. I would like to see this movie. I do have Netflix, so I probably will break down and watch that. One day I'll watch Beast of No Nation, but again, that's one thing with the streaming services. It's your convenience. You know it's going to be there. You know it'll always be there. So there's really no urgency either.
No urgency. Yeah, that's a great point. I think urgency to watch something is big. Right. So it's one of the things. I get a lot of stuff from my library, and if I get it from interlibrary loan, there's urgency there because I only have a couple weeks to watch it. So
same here. I'm with you. Netflix disc or Redbox. You know, these won't come out on Netflix disc either.
You can see that service going away before too long. So it's going to be.
I actually canceled mine. Actually, libraries are better than Netflix for me. So, all right. Definitely. Well, we will see. I'm sure this will not be the last time we talk about Netflix and the death of physical media.
Yeah.
So
things are changing. So as long as we are able to watch movies, I'm happy.
Yeah. Well, that won't. Yeah. Four movies a day. That won't change.
There you go.
Whether it's on disc or on online. So, okay, well, a couple remaining things from the Criterion Channel. There were a couple dumps. There was a Berlanga dump. So that's one. That's a filmmaker is it Jean-Louis Berlanga?
Yes. Or Louis, yeah.
Luis Garcia. Boy.
There it is. I think you were mixing Jean-Luc Godard with Luis Garcia Berlanga.
Yeah, I was just wrong. So Luis Garcia Berlanga has three films that were released on the service. Now, this is interesting because Peter Becker famously said that there's going to be an eclipse set of the Berlanga films and that these are worth discovery. And I'm sure they are, but it's been a little while since then, and we haven't seen an eclipse for a very long time, so... Do you think maybe this is the Eclipse set. Maybe
this could be it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it always seemed like it, I mean, to me, it really seemed like the death of the Eclipse series, unfortunately, was Filmstruck being released. But, you know, who knows? Maybe the thing we kept hoping for, that Eclipse would turn into Blu-ray releases instead of DVD releases, maybe that will happen. You know, I could certainly see that happening, where if they have the prints, or if the prints are in good enough shape, they can release it as an Eclipse-like Blu-ray set. That's what they'll do. Otherwise, it'll just be Filmstruck. You know, maybe.
I think it was actually a pretty big stride for them to release I Was Born But on Blu-ray, even as it, right, not as its own disc. So that's the first time, to my knowledge, that they've split up an Eclipse set and put it on Blu. So, yeah, I guess apologies to Trevor and David, because that means that series is probably on its last legs.
Could be,
Figure something out.
The only thing I keep coming back to, and we talked about libraries, is that, you know, my library, I know probably more populated areas have more Blu-ray, but my library still just buys DVDs, even of the new movie. So,
really?
You know, and Criterion is definitely something that a lot of libraries stock up on and keep. You know, they're considered like a library distributor, right? So maybe.
Well, mine is Blu-ray, and my library rocks. And in fact, remember when the dual format was happening? What they would do is they would split up DVD and Blu-ray. And I feared that once that ended, that they would just, of course, I own them all anyway, but still, I like them there. But I thought that they would stop doing the Blu-ray as well. But no, they've been doing both.
That's great.
But I think they don't buy every release now. I think they are a little selective.
More selective.
So, and there was another dump of about four films from Rainer Werner Fassbinder. Heard of him?
Yeah.
So there was Katzelmacher, which is an early one, Satan's Brew, which I really like, Chinese Roulette, which is also good, mid-70s, and then his final film, Querelle, which I thought was interesting. That's I haven't seen that one yet, and I don't know that it's been out on video.
I haven't either. It is out in the UK on Artificial Eye, but not in the U.S.,
Okay, well, I hear it is absolutely terrible, so I'm not going to be in a hurry to watch it. Hopefully, it won't expire. Maybe that'll be the impetus for me to get to it. But so there you go. There's some more Fassbinder. That's not Querelle is interesting, not as exciting, because these were all on Hulu, and you kind of expected them someday
to come. Yeah, sure.
So that's Filmstruck. Yay!
Yay, Filmstruck.
Or is it Boo? I don't know. No, it's yay.
Yeah, always
so, yay. All right, we're through this, Arnie. So,
nice.
Shall we get to our piece of flair?
Let's flair it. My piece of flair is not related to Criterion. Of course, it's not really meant to be. I recently watched this is a childhood favorite of mine. I think The Dark Crystal is unlike anything that was ever done at the time, and I don't think we'll see anything like it again. So, and it was a childhood favorite. I think it's 82, gave me nightmares when I was a kid, but I loved it. And recently rewatched it with my daughter, and she just said it was weird and just kind of dismissed it after that. Fair enough.
She just stomped on your childhood.
Yep. But it was resurrected recently because my son wanted to watch it. And what it taught me is never underestimate the power of peers, because when my daughter and I watched this just a month or two ago, he wasn't into it. But one of his friends had watched it recently with his dad, and his friend said the same thing. It's weird. But somehow, you know, because his friend wanted to see it, my son wanted to. So he had a friend over, the three of us watched it, and he dug it. He dug it quite a bit.
Way to go. All right.
I almost liked it better watching it again for whatever reason after having seen it recently. And the other piece of flair to go with that is there are some if you're into The Dark Crystal, I didn't realize this, there are some graphic novels out there. So there's a prequel.
Nice.
First edition is out of print, and then volume 2 and 3 are available. And there's a sequel series that's going on right now. So if you like The Dark Crystal, there's some more out there for you to read.
Okay. I remember it, but I don't remember it. So I saw it a long, long time ago. I think I was too young, or maybe, no, actually probably the age I saw it, I was probably too jaded or something. So, okay, well, my piece of flair is a piece of art. It is Haneke's The Happy End poster. So the film has not played at Cannes yet. I don't know when it's playing. Probably soon. I mean, I think the festival ends in a week or so. But and I'll be looking to see what they publish about it on Criterion.com. But the poster is a beach, and there's, first off, I don't care. I this is not a spoiler because I haven't seen it, but there's no friggin' way that this movie has a happy ending.
No, that's why it's such a great title for a Haneke film.
So the poster, go Google it. I'm not going to put it in the show notes, but it's just a beach or a body of water and a walkway or a road, I think, that goes.
Yeah, it looks like a walkway just into the water.
And yeah. But the cool thing is there's a little record button. So speaking of devices,
and cachet.
Yeah, makes you. Yeah. So I'm very intrigued by this. My expectation, again, this is not a spoiler because I have no idea, is probably whoever it is, probably all of them drown in that, sea horrifically.
No. That's probably a fair assumption, Aaron.
And somebody's recording it, and I'm going to say Toby Jones is recording it since he's on the cast list. anyway, I have a great poster. I'm hoping that it's a great film. That's one I think your expectations can be pretty high. I think if you're a Haneke fan.
I loved Amour. I think it was, if I remember, I picked it as my favorite film. It was one of the last films I saw of 2012. And okay. Yeah, I love all his stuff. I really do. The haters be damned. I'll watch anything he sees, he makes.
Yeah, Amour is one where I didn't like it as much as everybody else, but I still respected it, especially the performances.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
In the canon of in his filmography, I would put that near the bottom or maybe middle to the bottom. So anyway, that's our show. Yay.
Yay, Criteria Now.
Yay. So, okay, well, you can find us at on Facebook. Search for Criterion Now, the group. We're doing a lot of fun stuff. As mentioned, we have that poll. We'll do stuff like that again. And I'm going to do some giveaways. I haven't figured that out yet. And then we're on the Criterion Cast Network, so you can find us on that on Twitter, Criterion Cast, and on Facebook, Criterion Cast. And I'm on Twitter, AWES505, kinda. And our show, Criterion Close Up, is CriterionCloseUp.com. And where can we find you, Mr. Mark?
Same place as you on Twitter, at Mark Herney, HURNE, letterbox at M Herney. Again, not very active, but I will be, I'll flitter in and out. Feel free to send me a message or tweet. I'll definitely respond.
All righty. Pleasure having you, Mr. Mark. It's been a little
while. Thanks, Aaron. It's a lot of fun. Glad we could do this, yeah.
We'll do it again.